Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Mary Moeller is an advanced registered nurse practitioner. She's certified as a clinical specialist in adult psychiatric mental health nursing and as a psychiatric rehabilitation practitioner. She's lecturing tonight at 7 p.m. at the University of South Dakota Student Union in Vermilion. Her talk is called There Is No Health Without Mental Health, Our Nation in Crisis. Dr. Mary Moeller, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with the word crisis, our nation in crisis. Tell me why.
Our nation is in crisis related to being able to provide services for individuals who have serious and persistent brain illnesses. People refer to it as mental illness. I refer to them typically as illness of mental functions. So what we have are individuals that have abnormalities in brain function and are not able to, you know, live life and perceive life as the rest of us. And our country as a whole has really abandoned care for people with mental illness through decreased state funding.
So
that's the nutshell version.
Right. So I'm told in South Dakota we have, 15% of what we should have here. Is that fairly standard throughout the nation, or are we worse off than other states are because of our geography and the current services we have?
Well, you're better off than we are in Washington State. I live in the Tacoma region, about 40 miles south of Seattle, and our county is Pierce County, Washington. We have about 1 million population countywide, and we only have 23 voluntary inpatient psychiatric beds for that number of population.
Wow.
And statistically, you need to have 50 inpatient beds for every 100,000 population. So we should have about 500 in our region. You can do the math from where you're at here in South Dakota, 50 beds for every 100,000 population. So it's a very complicated problem that began back in the 60s and has continued to escalate. So we're just now seeing the major fallout from deinstitutionalization in communities that did not take federal dollars that had been given and prepare for to provide the services.
So elaborate on that a little bit. What happens in the 60s and how did we get here to this point? It has to do with politics. It has to do with diagnoses.
It has a great deal to do with politics on either side of the aisle. There's a lot that's been misunderstood, and I've done a lot of research on this over the years, how we've gotten into this problem with no housing and no inpatient, no community services. Back in the day when there were large state hospitals, individuals were sometimes very inappropriately admitted and diagnosed inappropriately, and there were a lot of abuses that happened in large institutions, and as such, that was one of the problems that needed to be addressed, that oftentimes was addressed by simply closing the institution. Mm. And closing an institution doesn't cure the problem. But our big, the current problem happened as a result of President Kennedy's 1963 Community Mental Health Center Act. It was a wonderful act. The original act was written to provide psychiatric services within a 50-mile radius of every citizen in the United States. And to accomplish this act, to accomplish this task, I should say, there needed to be about 1,500 community mental health centers built across the country. They were all to have been built with two stories, so that the first story would be where the individual would get day treatment and receive ongoing care. And then when a crisis would happen or a relapse would happen, because these are chronic illnesses that cycle, the patient would be hospitalized right there in that same facility on the second floor in an inpatient facility. So people would be taken care of at home. They'd be close to their family and friends, and it's a much more humane type of care than sending somebody, you know, hundreds of miles away to an institution. So that act, unfortunately, there were several variables that happened. So the act was passed in 1963, and then we know that we lost President Kennedy.
Right.
And then when President Johnson took over, Vietnam was escalating, and we know many dollars ended up being sent in war efforts. And what happened was that act, Kennedy's Act, didn't get appropriated until 1968. And when it got appropriated, it got appropriated at less than far less than the numbers of dollars that were needed. So instead of 1,500 mental health centers being built, there was around 550 or so that ended up getting built. So about a third of the number got built. And they got built with what we call declining block grants. So the federal government sent billions of dollars to the states, and they were sent to be dispersed over a 10-year period of time. So say, for instance, if South Dakota got $10 million the first year, the next year they would get $9 million, and then the state and local were to come up with $1 million. The next year they'd get $8 million, and then the state would come up to $2 million, et cetera. So by the time you got to the end of that 10-year declining block grant, that you would be self-sufficient. Well, what happened was there was pretty poor reporting mechanisms and accounting. So I would say about four-fifths, at least in my personal experience of working in these areas, in the last year of the declining block grant, took the money and remodeled and made their facilities very lovely and said, well, we're not going to get any more federal dollars, so we don't have to take federally subsidized patients, so we're not going to be a community mental health center anymore. We'll privatize, and we'll take a few Medicaid patients. So all of a sudden, agencies that have been built and specifically to fund public sector and to take care of individuals who had been institutionalized, now we're not serving those people. So now we end up with getting a lot of homeless mentally ill. Sure. And that, you know, continued to escalate. And then healthcare costs started escalating. And we just see a tremendous problem. So, for example, in my area, there were psychiatric patients, homeless with mental illness, that were being housed in emergency rooms 3, 4, 5 months. And because there's no place to go. Right. So funding has been cut so seriously that there's not housing, enough housing at all, and crisis services. And if you have an adolescent with a problem, you might have to send them 5, 6, 7 states away for maybe a month's worth of treatment, and then they come home and it doesn't fix the problem.
Right.
So our crisis is quite profound, where we have about 20% of the population that have some type of either a mental health or a psychiatric problem. There's big differences. All of us have mental health needs. All of us have periods in our life when we get sad or upset or anxious, but we're able to take care of ourselves. But we still have mental health needs. We have counseling needs. Then there are those about 10%, 10 to 15%, with serious and persistent mental illnesses that are attributable to very serious brain pathology, schizophrenia in various forms, bipolar disorder, major depression, serious post-traumatic stress disorder, serious obsessive compulsive disorder, some of these that are very serious illnesses that are psychiatric illnesses, which are very different from a mental health life and living type of situation. And I don't mean to diminish or demean mental health problems as being serious, because people can become suicidal and not have a psychiatric problem but have mounting mental health needs. So we need to be able to serve both groups of individuals. Unfortunately, the people with psychiatric illnesses do not have a voice. They don't have a collective voice to be able to go to the legislature and lobby.
Right.
So people who have serious psychosis have a difficult time speaking for themselves. So you have other groups that speak for them. But it doesn't carry the same weight in the legislature as if you get a large contingency of people with a various disorder that can go and say, hey, we need help.
Sure. Huh. So is that one of the things that needs to happen next, is just, to have that coordinated, communication from families and professionals and people who can speak for the people who are suffering and maybe can't speak for themselves?
Well, we've been doing that. I mean, I'm from Nebraska originally, and I left Nebraska in 1992 to be able to go to the Pacific Northwest and establish the first independent nurse-managed, owned and operated outpatient rural psychiatric clinic. Because the Nurse Practice Act in Washington State allowed for me to be able to be independent. And very successful clinic. We ended up closing in the end of 08 because of financial cutbacks in Washington State that have continued to escalate since then. And so what happens is I would go to the legislature, and they'd say, well, you know, you're self-serving. You're just trying to keep your job. You don't understand.
I see. Okay.
You do not understand. So the family movement, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, we have what we have in this country because of families.
Right.
And NAMI started in California in the late 70s, early 80s. And before NAMI, there was one federal researcher studying mental illness.
Wow.
In the 1980s, before NAMI became vocal and very organized and outstanding organization, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and another group in South Dakota has been very active. And the states have what they have because of the organized family movement.
All right,
but
what
it's still not the same as individuals themselves. That you know, you have a serious psychosis, and it's hard to, if you're having hallucinations, to go and speak articulately in front of a legislative body.
So what does need to happen next? What takes us in that next step forward that we need as a nation?
Well, that's a really loaded question, isn't it?
I suppose. Not intentionally. Yeah.
Well, it's a complex question. I mean, healthcare is at the forefront of many conversations these days in many areas. So now, unfortunately, people are having difficulty accessing all kinds of services, not just psychiatric services.
Right.
So you can't ever get back dollars that were misspent, right?
Right.
I know in Washington State, I remember what was happening when we ended up having to close our clinic because mental health dollars ended up going to help fund some of the ferry systems around the island. And you're just powerless, you know. So it is a legislative issue in looking at how public dollars are spent for mental health as well as physical health. And unless your brain is operating to the optimum capacity, then you don't take as good care as your body. So, for example, people with schizophrenia die 25 years younger on average than individuals who do not have schizophrenia. Mm. And that's because their brain doesn't perceive what's happening to their bodies in the same way as you and I. So they may think they have a little cough and it's full-on pneumonia.
Sure.
So we have that element of individuals who don't recognize physical illness, and then when they come, they're very, very ill and require a lot of care. So it's back to the age-old ounce of prevention is a pound of cure.
Right.
I mean, I went to Mount Marty College for my undergraduate and graduated in 1971 with my bachelor's of science in nursing from Mount Marty. And I remember so clearly how our faculty there were just emphasizing the importance of prevention and early intervention for all illnesses. And that continues to be something that's extremely important, is early intervention. There are programs now. There's a great program in Canada that's a mental health curriculum for high schools. And we're bringing that curriculum down to Washington State to help faculty and students understand what are early warning signs that there may be mental illness on board. The problem is that many individuals have had symptoms for, on average, 5 to 7 years before there's a diagnosis.
Mm.
And then after diagnosis, it takes a while to get the right medications and treatment if you can access care.
Right.
And then for an individual to fully embrace that there is really something wrong with my brain, that takes another few years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a quick fix where you can go in and, you know, get a throat swab and say, oh, yeah, you need a, you know, you've got a gram-negative bacillus growing in your throat, and here's how we treat it.
Right.
So it's not a quick fix.
Dr. Mary Moeller is going to be at SDSU, I misspoke earlier, in Brookings there at the university.
Brookings.
Yeah, Brookings, I got that wrong. That's on me. Sorry about that. So SDSU, Brookings, at the University Student Union. It's a complex topic, and so you need more time to sit down with her and hear what she has to say. Her lecture is called There Is No Health Without Mental Health, Our Nation in Crisis. That's at 7 p.m. Dr. Moeller, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.